Items that are not on this evening's agenda, please feel free to do so at this time. Mr. Brown.
Honorable Chair Hill and members, it's my understanding that today may be, in fact, John Scholl's birthday. So I wanted to take a moment to say, John, I hope you're not watching this, and happy birthday, and thank you for your service.
We would certainly echo that. Is there any other comment for items that are not on the agenda this evening?
Patty Welsh, Arroyo Grande. I would like to bring up about the representatives of Oceano. With all due respect, Mr. Scholl's gave us notice when he was going to be in the hospital. And by the way, John, happy birthday, because I know you're watching. You've given us notice. It would be nice if the representatives from Oceano could give us some indication if the board member or the alternate's going to be here. We seem to have a flip-flop, and as a constituent, I would just like to see some consistency, if we could, please. Thank you.
Any other comment on items that are not on the agenda this evening? Ms. Tacker.
Good evening. I'm Julie Tacker, and happy birthday, John Scholl's, but happy birthday to Mrs. Hill. It's also her birthday today. Too bad. I know you didn't want me to say that. The reference to the Oceano representation, I do find interesting. Ms. Lucy is the alternate. So I don't recall if the bylaws say something about how many times the actual appointee has excused absences, or if that ever comes into play, but I think maybe that should be looked at to see if indeed maybe the representative should be assigned. And that would, of course, go home to Oceano to do a new appointment if that's going to continue. Then, and since Miss Lucy is here tonight, at your last meeting, I mentioned that I had done some public records requests regarding some documents that she had referenced. And apparently she had referenced policies and procedures, but she meant the health and safety code. And at your last meeting, she, as I recall, waved some papers and said she had a receipt from her email for something she'd sent to me, and I had no recollection of it. And in fact, I never received it until that night when she forwarded it to me. Apparently, she'd inadvertently sent her response to my request to her own staff, but not to me. So any receipt was fabricated, and there was, I never got those emails until 2 weeks ago. So I just want to be clear that you lied. So, again, and the one thing I really wanted to touch on is I think we're all in great hope that the El Nino will present itself and we're going to get a lot of rain. My concern is that since the flood of 2010, 5 years has gone by, the county has spent $2.3 million trying to address that flood, and very little on-the-ground improvements have been done. And with respect to the sanitation district, you took the biggest hit in the flood. You are still grappling with the effects of that flood and paying for attorneys to defend you from that flood. And I don't know what our game plan is when it does start to rain. I know some improvements were done on site, but you can't do anything about what's outside your boundaries. And those are the county's boundaries, the airport, the road right-of-ways, the Meadow Creek is the state's. All of that needs, maybe you guys should be talking to those agencies, state parks and county, about what's being done, before the rains actually come, and maybe get a itemization of what the $2.3 million has been spent on and how that benefits your district.
Thank you. Any other comment on items not on the agenda?
Good evening. My name is April McLaughlin, and I'm an Aurora Grandy resident. I'm sure you guys won't answer me immediately, but if we could find out the vote results from the last special meeting where it was closed session regarding the resignation that was tendered, the outcome was given that it was accepted, but there was no vote tally given to us so we could know how many were yay or nays. That's all I'm asking for. Thanks.
I believe with council's concurrence, we can state that it was a unanimous vote. Any other public comment on items not on the agenda this evening? Okay, hearing none, we'll move on to the consent agenda. Any questions or comments on the agenda items?
No, I don't.
Mary, do you have any? I have none either. Is there a public comment on the consent agenda items? That includes the warrants, yes.
Good evening again. I'm Julie Tacker, and I continue to have concerns about your ongoing legal expenses. This warrant packet has $15,000 from Brownstein Hyatt, and I just want confirmation that the money that 2 weeks ago you asked not be paid is not rolled into this invoice. I hope you've had a chance to look at it before you approve it. So $15,000, I think, is excessive, and again, me and your public want to know more about that and why it continues to be so high. I'm unclear on really how much work they've had to do. I know with regard to the billing, they were directed to come up with some options, but I haven't seen this kind of money. The other one is nearly $4,000 to Shipsy and Seitz. Mr. Seitz is your co-counsel, or I don't know, you've kept him on to help with the settlement agreement or continuing litigation at the state, and you know, I think it was $4,000 last month. What on earth, where are you going with that litigation that this kind of fee continues to plague you? And what's missing is anything from the Downey brand, and are they as I recall, sometimes they hold back 1 or 2 or 3 months worth of charges and then come back and ask for those payments. So we haven't seen a Downey brand invoice in a while, and it concerns me that that is accruing and that your district is going to be surprised when that bill finally comes.
Thank you. Is there any other comment on the consent agenda items?
Good evening, Chair Hill and directors. Beatrice Spencer from Aurora Grandy. I, too, marked a couple of items on this warrant list. Number one, of course, was the rather high legal bill, which Julie already mentioned, but as a ratepayer, we'd really like to see those expenses brought somewhere into line, and they just seem to keep going up and up and up. And something that pales in comparison, of course, is the Aramark bill. And just having gone through this myself, I'd just like to respectfully ask staff if they could maybe put that out for bid or try to renegotiate the current contract that they have. There are other service providers out there, and I realize it's only $700, but when we're looking for every nickel and dime we can, there's a place that we might be able to save a few bucks every month. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments on the consent agenda items this evening? Okay, hearing none, is there any comment from the board? Barbara? I share the public concern with the high legal bills, and I would request staff to reconsider when it's necessary to involve legal counsel, because those bills do seem, in my judgment, to be rather high. And that would go for both our current interim counsel and Mr. Seitz, who is kind of a go-between counsel, I guess, and I'm not sure how that bill has gotten so high. So with that comment, is there a motion to approve the consent agenda?
I move to approve the consent agenda as presented.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded that we approve items 3A and 3B, the consent items. May I have a roll call, please?
Yes, sir. Director Nichols?
Yes.
Director Lucy?
Yes.
Chairman Hill?
Yes. Item 4 is the plant superintendent's report. Mr. Clemens?
Good evening, directors. I'm happy to give a positive operations report this evening. Our key performance indicators, the test results that indicate how well the plant is performing, are all returning to what's normal for our plant. Our latest BOD was actually, at the time of the report, the latest BOD, biochemical oxygen demand, was 27. And then the one we just received today was 20. If you look at the chart last year, effluent BOD number averaged 26. So not only have we returned, we're actually doing a little better than last year's average over the last few test results. The latest suspended solids reading was 33.20. The ones prior to that were believed 38, 40, and 42. So once again, we're returning to what's normal or better than that for the plant at this point. It's kind of fun because the plant still isn't configured as it normally is, but even with it being out of configuration, the staff has figured out how to manage the plant and the processes in a way that that we're able to meet our state requirements and provide a safe effluent, even in the condition that we're in. Again, it shows the expertise of the operators at the plant and their ability to adjust and adapt when things aren't well. That'll bode well for the El Nino time. I think that if we can manage through this, it bodes well for us managing anything that comes against us in the future. So we do expect to satisfy our permit requirements for the month of August at this point. Excuse me? Okay. With regard to maintenance, during this time, we also had to do our normal stuff to maintain the plant. So we had to drain and clean the chlorine contact chamber. We installed a 12-inch influent line from pump number 3 at the headworks to the splitter box. We completed installation of a sump level indicator, number 2 digester sump. Disassembled and repaired centrifuge. Our centrifuge had been down for a few weeks. It's a major part of keeping the plant clean. It takes the sludge and takes the water from the sludge, separates the water from the sludge, allows us to dump the sludge in the bed and have it removed quickly, as opposed to in our sludge drying beds where it could take 2 to 3 weeks to dry. So it's great to have the centrifuge back online. We also cleared a clog in the centrifuge polymer injection system, set up a polyblend polymer dosing unit at the headworks. Remember, we had removed polymer from the headworks because we didn't need it, but during this time where the plant is stressed, we decided to begin to inject polymer in our primary clarifiers again to help settling and help reduce the load throughout the plant. We repaired a PVC line at our amiot filter, removed and replaced a grinder at the headworks. We had to rebuild a Zurich three-way valve for sludge beds. We replaced desiccant pads in all the electrical boxes. After we were able to take the 6-inch whacker pump out of service, we were able to get it serviced and ready for its next usage. Collected oil sample from our FFR gearbox. If you remember, we have some concern about that gearbox beginning to deteriorate. We had to repair ISCO composite sampler. ISCO composite sampler, they take a 24-hour sample. It collects a sample on a regular basis so that we can get a picture of what our water parameters are over the course of 24 hours. And we installed interior weir at the splitter box. I guess I have it in progress, I should say. We're done with that. At the bottom of the in progress list, we have clearing debris from the indigent camp. On the third page of the report, we show what the job looked like before our staff got to it at the top three pictures, and then what it looked like this morning. If anybody has any copies of the report, the top three pictures are on Monday morning. And then the bottom two pictures are the way it looked on this morning. We were able to get our guys in there. We got a bobcat. We got we used a 40 yard bin, which is equivalent to about 12 dumpsters. And we we got 2 40 yard bins worth of garbage out of there again, which is the total equivalent of about 24 standard size dumpsters. So our guys got it done in 2 days with the help of some. Yeah. So again, I always like to note when our people do really good work. That was really impressive to get that cleared out so quickly. Also in progress, we're still working with Garing Taylor and Associates to finally get a permit so we can go ahead and finish our inspection and coating of our bridge and our sewer bridge in Arroyo Grande. Digester 1 cleaning is still on the back burner right now, deferring to the projects we currently have ahead of us. We began work with Mike Nunley and Associates to draft RFP for the grit removal system. That's about ready. We began planning for installation of mechanical bar screen. That's going to be ready real soon. We are currently involved in the digital mentor project. They actually came in and videoed the repair process on the centrifuge. They've videoed a number of our SOPs already in our daily rounds for operators, which will help us with training and help our staff to refamiliarize themselves over time with all of our processes. With regard to SCADA, today was a good day. Our guy who's doing the SCADA called me in and showed me two or three screens that are operating, and the lights are coming on and off when the equipment comes on. So we're getting close to having that up and online. That's been a 2-year project since I've been here, and it's really been a 9-year project overall. I think they began this district began implementing SCADA in 2006. Replacement of sewage pipeline between the headworks and the splitter box. I'll get back to that. And we're also working with MK engineers to re-implement our GIS program. Our GIS program basically gives us a position for each and every one of our sewer manholes and their location, their elevation, and where we can record any detailed information. We had that in place before. Somewhere along the way, we lost it, and so now Mike Nunley Associates have the ability to help us re-implement that without it being a huge cost. With regard to replacement of the sewer pipeline, I think we have a few pictures in here of holes and pits that have been dug out, and those are locations where they'll be installing the 24-inch line into the existing 30-inch line. There are also pictures here where we've had to use a 12-inch line, and actually there's two 12-inch lines if you look at the picture, to convey the raw effluent to our, well, we were sending it to our clarified, for now to the splitter box, and that's given us a real improvement in our effluent quality. Where we are now is they've dug up all the holes they need. We've brought in the pipe. The pipe's been fused already. We have had the valves delivered. All the equipment is in place already. We had a little slowdown in the headworks area because that area the pipe in that area is literally under groundwater. And so we've had to install two wells to keep to constantly pump the water out so the guys can get down there and cut the pipe open. Today, In fact, they were able to get the pipe cut open and cut out and taken out of there so that we can get ready to install a valve and piping in that area. The contractors have already removed all piping and headers in the headworks, which was a huge job. And so we're progressing quite well. To try to give an end time is difficult because, you know, we're dealing with some pipes that are really underwater. And so but we are progressing well. We kept an eye on cost, and it looks like at this point we're going to be pretty close to whatever the estimated cost was. If anyone's particularly interested, you can always give me a call and come out and see what's going on at the plant. Our chairman came out. That was always encouraging. I got to say our staff kind of gets a kick out of the chairman coming out, taking a look around. They're kind of appreciative of the interest from our board. So just what they told me. With that, I believe that's pretty much it from my report. I'll be more than happy to answer any question that the board may have.
Mary, any questions for John?
Barbara? No questions. One comment. I would like a tour of the plant.
Name the date?
I'll have to look at my calendar.
Okay.
Well, first, kudos to the staff for maintaining and bringing the plant back into spec after the influent pipe rupture, or holes at least, perforations. And that's been a great effort. I did go out and see the major construction site is what it looks like, and looks like things are being done safely, and that's always a top concern, of course. So looks like it was being well handled. And then looking at the pictures of all of the stuff that had to be cleaned up with the two major roll-offs there, that's an impressive effort as well. So thank you very much to the staff for continuing to do a great job. Is there public comment on the plant superintendent's report?
Beyond the comments that were already made, I just want to express my appreciation and hope that the SCADA program moves forward quickly. 9 years is a long time, but I think it's going to help you all at the plant site. So I'm happy to hear progress. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comment on the superintendent's report? Ms. Price?
My question is, what is going on with the redundancy project? I haven't heard anything about that lately, and I would like to know how that's progressing or if it's progressing. And then I wanted to comment on what I've been hearing about the weather, that we're going to have a big El Nino year, lots of rainfall. And I was wondering, are we prepared to deal with a lot of extra water flooding and that type of thing? And those were my questions.
In terms of your first question dealing with redundancy, the board last meeting engaged Mr. Nunley to provide some budget and other estimates for us, and that report is due by the next meeting, if I recall correctly. And Mr. Sweet or Mr. Clemens, do you have a comment on the preparation for stormy weather?
Well, I think at this point there has been preparation done at the plant over the years to ensure the major failure element was the failure of one of our intake pumps and motors, and that there has been considerable electrical work done to the plant to make sure that failure does not occur again. Anything you want to add to that, John?
Yeah, all the pumps have been replaced in the headwork since that time. They've been either rebuilt or new, and the other pumps that we would need to have in service are in FFR, and all three of the FFR pumps are new over the past 3 years. So all the pumps that we would need to get the water through the plant are 3 years or younger. So we have virtually all new equipment with regard to the pumps.
And wiring.
As Rick stated, we've redone the wiring. There was a major rewiring project, and most of the old wires were replaced and replaced with new wires. So all of that's new over the last few years, certainly since 2010. And then, of course, every year around this time, we do a pre-winter wet weather review of our plant. So we'll do that, and we'll make sure we report when we do. Okay.
Thank you. On mentioning the FFR again, what was the result on the bearing sample?
We just sent the latest sample out. So we just sent it out this week.
To be determined. Any other comment on the report? Hearing none, we'll please receive and file. Thank you very much. Board action on individual items. Item 5A is review and approve the continuing emergency action to repair the influent pipeline, as we were just discussing. Mr. Sweet.
Yes, sir. Chairman Hill, members of the board, this is once again something that has to appear on every agenda until this project is completed. We're asking that, as you have the last three meetings, you make the two findings of that the emergency action will not permit a delay resulting from a competitive solicitation for bids, and that an action is necessary to respond to the emergency. I think all the information has been the last three meetings. Unless there's specific questions, I'll just leave it at that.
Barbara, question?
No questions.
Yeah. I have no questions. Is there any comment from the public on this item? Okay, hearing none, do we have a motion?
I move to accept the review and continuing emergency action to repair the influent pipeline.
Okay, can we make that the emergency action will not permit a delay resulting from competitive solicitation for bids, and that the action is necessary to respond to the emergency?
Yes.
Acceptable? Okay, it's been moved and seconded that we adopt the staff recommendation, continue the emergency action that will not permit a delay resulting from a competitive solicitation for bids, and we find that the action is necessary to respond to the emergency. May I have a roll call, please?
Yes, sir. Director Nichols?
Yes.
Director Lucy?
Yes.
Chairman Hill?
Yes. Item 5B, status report and requests for additional resources by Carl Knudsen Associates for review of past management practices. Mr. Sweet.
Yes, as the board and the public's aware, we have retained Carl Knudsen Associates to perform a review of past management practices. Mr. Knudsen has been hard at work. Him and associates have been hard at work at doing that. They have already prepared a review of accounting and business records, interviews of over 20 individuals, examined 56 boxes of plant records, and reviewed and examined vendor files. At the last board meeting, the board requested that there be a status report provided by Mr. Knudsen regarding his current progress. So as we entered into discussions with Mr. Knudsen, he noted that there was still a considerable amount of work that he believed should be done to give us a complete report. And at that time, he submitted both a request for additional resources and the status report. We have attached that to this agenda. Mr. Knudsen would like to perform interviews with John Wallace and Wallace Group employees, interviews with Mike Seitz, review of Regional Water Quality Board reports and investigative findings, and review of reports and findings prepared by Shannon Sweeney. He believes that it will take approximately 150 hours of additional work for a cost of $22,500, which would raise the original estimate for this report from $55,000 to $77,500. And Mr. Knudsen is here this evening if you would like to ask him any questions.
Do we have questions for Mr. Knudsen?
It's my understanding that the interview with John Wallace has already been completed. Is that correct?
Please come up.
No, it has not, with Mr. Wallace. But we did conclude one of the interviews today, at least the initial round, with Mr. Seitz.
And, thank you.
Yes.
Mary? I have a couple questions for you. How many interviews have you done?
20. Today 20. Is, now we have 22.
Pardon me?
We have done 22 now.
22?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And have you been working with staff or working with the review committee or who do you mainly communicate with?
I've been working with the staff over at the plant. Mr. Clemens, Amy, and Mr. Sweet. And I have to say, I've interviewed all the operators over there and some of the past operators, and I'm very impressed with the operators over at the plant. They do a great job, and quite amazing job that they do. They're a very talented group.
It is. Okay. And any phone interviews or just trying to get a sense of your time?
Interviews, the process is we have to find the person. They have to agree to meet with us. We have to prepare for the interviews. We have to travel to the interviews. We have to do the interview with the person. And then we write up a detailed interview report. That's the process.
Maybe you could elaborate a little bit for me. When I read your report, and then I read a piece that was online, they didn't seem to be consistent with each other. So maybe you'd like to talk a little bit about that.
I don't believe that I've read the online report. I've heard, I think I glanced at it, and I made my... send an email to Mr. Sweet as to some of the areas that I disagreed with.
So would you like to tell us what those areas are?
Yes. It's a matter of record. The allegation or the insinuation that Mr. Wallace erased accounting records, what I got out of that was that my finding was that he intentionally did that. That is not my finding. My finding is that the accounting records were in some form of electronic status prior to 2008, and when they switched to QuickBooks, the old electronic files were wiped because they were no longer used or needed. That was my finding.
Did you see any other inconsistencies between your report and what did you... Did you actually know that you were talking? Did you speak to the media? Or I'm just trying to figure out which is more factual.
Well, what's more factual is my actual report, which is, I think, part of the board packet.
Right.
What somebody else reports as they read my report and then mm-hmm. they do their interpretation of it,
mm-hmm.
I have no control over that. They will write what they write.
Okay. So you weren't involved in that piece
no.
whatsoever?
Not
it was strictly taken from paper.
That's right.
Okay. Very good. Thank you, sir.
And just a time estimate on if we approve the recommendation this evening, just a ballpark estimate of how long we would expect to...
We're still getting records from Amy as it relates to some of the information we've requested. Hopefully that will be done this week. It was quite a bunch of information. They're scanning it now. And they were going to do it anyway, but now they're doing it. So that's a process that, that we're waiting to be completed. And basically what they've done so far is that all the billing records that we asked for, they've scanned, and I have it on a flash drive that I was given to tonight. What we're waiting now for is the board packets dating from 2004 to 2010, because I've downloaded all the information from the website down to 2010. So we're just waiting for those for that information. The interview with Mr. Wallace, and I, as we do these interviews, then other people will tell us, well, you should interview this person. They will have relevant information. So we received yet another suggestion today, and that's the person at the audit for the county, so Mr. Erb. And so we'll be adding that person's name to our list. So I don't expect it to grow much more, but wherever the information comes from and wherever we find it, it's a relevant lead. Of course, we bring Mr. Sweet up to date as much as we can, and Mr. Clemens. My estimate is we will do the interviews with Mr. Wallace in September. But during that period of time, I'm going to be starting to write the final report and putting the final exhibits together. So the time between us and the final interviews will probably, I'm hoping that we will be able to have that report done in October. I have a trial in mid-September that's going to take a week. It's a tax fraud case, so that'll take about a week out of my time. But other than that, I have a clear calendar.
Okay, thank you for that. I just wanted to get a rough idea.
One more question. Have you interviewed any board members, past or present?
Have you spoken with two?
Two?
Past board members, and I'm going to speak with current board members to get their... I don't know if Tony Farrar is still in the area, but I'll be reaching out for him and Mr. Nichols. I think those were the two board members, and Chairman Hill, of course, that were there during the period of time that we're looking at.
Okay, great.
Thank you very much. Okay, is there a public comment on this item?
First of all, I want to commend the work that's been done. It's like looking at a remodeled house, an old house, and you're trying to repair it. Sometimes it takes more expenses and more time than you thought, so I would strongly urge you, he even mentioned that leads come as they come along, and I don't see him milking this at all. He's trying to do a thorough job. So I'm respectfully asking that you authorize that expense. That being said, it was brought to my attention this morning, and I looked on the website, that the report that was marked confidential was put on the public website, and it does no good to this body, it does no good to the ratepayers to have an audit's findings prematurely let out. It can affect the end result. So I'm respectfully requesting that the manager of the district not post confidential memos on the website. If I were to do that where I work, I'd be fired. But beyond that, it affects the integrity of the investigation. So respectfully, this is not an issue for public knowledge and public consumption at this point in time. He's still doing his work. He should be allowed to do his work and let the chips fall where they may. I agree. Media is going to write what they're going to write. That's a very true statement. A lot of times media gets it wrong. That's a very true statement. My point is it shouldn't be out for public consumption at this point. And Mr. Sweet did this district a huge disservice if, in fact, he authorized that this confidential report be put on a public website so that media could consume it and the public could consume it. And I hope you talk to him privately about not doing that again, because that was clearly unprofessional. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any other public comment on item 5B?
I also read the agenda packet, and I was appalled. As you can see, it clearly states confidential. When you guys go into a closed door meeting, to review somebody's performance review, that is confidential. I've never heard somebody come back out and tell the public what's going on. I don't know if it's because Mr. Sweet has given notice that he is now trying to sabotage what's going on with this district, but I didn't appreciate that at all. Confidential means confidential. I would also like to say I would like to the board to authorize the funds for Mr. Knutson to finish. As I've said in the past, and I will say again, in order for us not to go down the wrong path again, we need to know what happened. So please let this ride all the way out. Let Mr. Knutson do his job, and let's move forward from there. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there other comment on this item?
Chairman and board members, my name is Ron Holt from Arroyo Grande, and I would like to make 2 points. I realize that there was this agreement with Mr. Knutson was somewhat open-ended when we first made it. I don't have too great a problem with adding more funds at this point, but I want to know if there's some kind of a limit to this. Is he going to be coming back in another month or two and asking for more beyond that, or is this going to be enough to take care of his investigation? And I kind of have reservations about being too. I don't know if there's something you can do to say, okay, here's the $22,000 plus that you requested, but we need to know that this is going to do the job, get it done. I'm seeing a lot of things going on here that are adding costs to the district's budget, and I'm concerned that some of this could get out of hand. Second thing is, I don't know how it applies with the confidentiality issues that Mr. Brown and Mrs. Welch brought up, but Mr. Knutson's original proposal was also marked confidential and made it into the record because there's no way to avoid it and still deal with it with our Citizens Committee. I don't know if this may be a case of classifying stuff confidential on an automatic, maybe that's something that he could address, but just automatically classifying that without really something that he just does automatically, and maybe it isn't necessarily a confidential thing at this point, but that's something that you could talk to him. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comment?
Hello, Chair Hill and Board. I'm Debbie Peterson. I live in Grover Beach, and I wanted to speak to the actual decision you need to make this evening and remind you that we've been talking about going out to the public for several years now to raise much-needed funds to make some improvements to the plant. And I think that unless we finish this project, it's going to be very difficult to pull in funds from the public if they see that we started something and didn't get it completed, something that's been of concern for many years. Also wanted to remind you that in a previous meeting when you were discussing whether or not we would go forward with an audit, I believe it was either Director Hill or perhaps it was Director Scholes who actually said it's possible that there may need to be some additional funds here that it could go up to. I believe they said $75,000. So this isn't something that's coming totally out of the blue. There was an anticipation that there may be some additional funds needed to complete the job. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comment? Ms. Tacker.
Good evening again. I'm Julie Tacker. And just to be clear, I'm pretty sure the RFP review committee's work sunsetted when Mr. Knutson was hired. And I just want to be, because Mr. Holt mentioned it, Ms. Lucy mentioned it, and I just want to be, maybe I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure it's their work is over. The other thing that it's not a tremendous amount of money that Mr. Knutson's asking for. It's not a surprise. But putting it in perspective, I think the total, $77,500, the least we can hope for is peace of mind. And the most we can hope for is restitution. And I think we're on that track. We need to put this to bed and allay the concerns, the rumors, the fears. And if at all district funds were misappropriated, misallocated, we need to know that and then put the stopgaps in place so that cannot happen again.
Thank you. Any other comment on this item? Okay, hearing none at this time. Come back to the board. Comments? Barbara?
I have a question, but I rather doubt that Mr. Knudsen could give me an off-the-shoulder answer. From your work so far, have you found any direct indications of malfeasance or graft or corruption whatsoever?
I don't think I could comment on that.
Okay.
Since it's not completed yet, and so I think it would be unfair to suggest that that has actually occurred.
That's reasonable. That's it.
Mary? Any comments?
I guess I you know, I'm not opposed to spending money where there's a value and a benefit, and certainly not repeating the past is a valid concern. But you know, I actually would feel better tabling this for at least till the next meeting or the meeting after that to look at it a little bit more closer. There's a couple things that kind of concern me a little bit in the report based on past reports. The confidentiality definitely concerns me greatly, and it does impact the I'm sorry, do you want to hold it? Somebody have something to say? Then I'll finish. So I would be supportive of maybe reviewing it a little bit closer, asking staff the questions that I have, and then moving forward. Because I just can't see... I know there's a value there of spending additional funds, but I have to make that argument because the report doesn't make it for me.
Okay, I guess, is that your comment? Mm-hmm. I'm supportive of this item as presented. As one of the speakers mentioned, that we did anticipate, I think, at the outset that there may be some additional work that needed to be done once the lid of the worm can, if you will, was opened. And as Mr. Knudsen said, when you embark on something like this, you're not exactly certain where it would take you. And I think he's, by all accounts, done a diligent job and has some more to finish up. And I think that's perfectly reasonable. It's... I think it's beyond Mr. Knudsen's control that his preliminary report was released to the district, which I think was very unfortunate, having engaged in audits of various sorts and investigations of various sorts of a technical nature over the years. I know that when you first start into something and you're finding facts, that you may find that your initial impressions turn out to be wrong, or turn out to be something that is only a stepping stone to something farther on. So a preliminary report, I perfectly understand why a preliminary report would be marked confidential, because that may, as the auditor, the investigation proceeds, that you know, other issues may come to light, other facts may come to light that may either reinforce or disprove or change what's in the preliminary findings at any snapshot in time. So I think that's the primary reason that preliminary results are generally not disseminated.
Chairman Hill, if I might, as you see, the title of the report is Request for Additional Hours. It was not a preliminary report. What we asked for was a status report consistent with what the board's desires were and a indication of exactly why more hours were required. I did make Mr. Knutson aware that this was going to be a public document and added to the staff report in compliance with his wishes for consideration of additional hours. I'm sorry that somehow confidential is marked on that, but I think Mr. Knutson will confirm that he was aware that this was going to be a public document and attached to the staff report. So I do feel inclined to let you know that's exactly what happened and that this is not a preliminary report. It was served to be a status report as per the board's request.
Thank you for that clarification. It appears to me from the status report and from the discussion that we've had that the ongoing work is progressing well, and I would look forward to bringing it to a conclusion. So I'm supportive of moving forward with this this evening as recommended by staff. And with that, I would move that we approve the continuation of the review of past management practices by Mr. Knudsen and authorize the additional funding of $22,500 to, as recommended, to continue that.
I support Ms. Lucy's suggestion of postponing. I would be much more comfortable with Mr. Scholes, who has been fully briefed on all of this, to be the one to help make the decision.
Okay, is there a second to the motion? Okay, hearing none, would anyone else like to make a motion on how to proceed?
I move that this be postponed to a time when the three board members are together to make the decision.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded that we delay this item. Is there a time certain that we can?
The next meeting would be on what date?
September 2nd is the next meeting.
I would think that Mr. Scholes would be available by then.
If I might suggest, we just continue this item to September 2nd, and if the board members aren't here, you could continue it to the next time. Is there any additional information the board would like us to provide in support of that continuance?
Well, respect the confidentiality. I mean, I think it needs to be reviewed before it's put out as a, you know, to the press, so it's accurate. That's not fair to the public. So if you could exercise the confidentiality on the report, the next report, if that's confusing to you.
I'll conform with the guidelines of the law. That's all I can do.
So it sounds like we have a sense that the board wants to table this until the next meeting, which is September 2nd. Is that correct?
That was my motion, yeah.
Okay. Would you like me to place a roll call on that?
I think we can just do a voice vote on it, or let's do a roll call. Why not? Let's do a roll call.
If we're not unanimous, we have to do a roll call.
Okay.
Yes. Director Nichols?
Yes.
Director Lucy?
Yes.
Chairman Hill?
Respectfully, no. Thank you, Mr. Knudsen. Brings us to item 5C, options for district billing.
Thank you, Chairman Hill, members of the board. In May of this year, questions arose regarding the ability of OCSD to justify their cost for billing. On June 17th, the board directed that pending payments to all member agencies be deferred. And at the July 1st meeting, the board authorized us to be begin investigation analysis of all legally feasible options. On July 10th, we received correspondence from OCSD that stated that lacking an agreement between the district and OCSD, that the OCSD would cease to collect for services of the district. They offered to continue these services at the rate of $36.66 per two-month period. At the July 15th board meeting, the board considered and declined to enter into an agreement with OCSD. On August 1st, new billings for the OCSD were mailed out, and in fact, they did not include our billing on that. At the August 5th meeting, the board expressed displeasure with the decision of OCSD and directed the options for billing question, directed our customers be made aware through a distribution of postcard mailing, which should happen later this week, actually, and the text for what's in that postcard mailing is, in fact, in the staff report. So we, both Jenna and I, have worked diligently to try to come up with the options, and we think there's three primary options, and that's that the district assumes the duties of all billing functions for those customers served by OCSD. The district places the cost of sewer services on the county property tax rolls, and the district utilizes the services of the member agencies for all billing functions, what happened up until August 1st. So when we went through the billing functions, when I went through, and primarily Jenna worked on the property tax roll issue. But when I went through and tried to determine what were the functions of basic billing functions, I came up with, from talking to vendors and how this actually occurs, there's basically three things that happen. There's the operating of the customer database. That's where you keep all records of the customers, and you record payments, and you determine what the balances are, and you communicate with somebody who is going to send the bills out about what the bills, how much the bills should be. Then there's the people who actually print the bills based on what they got from the customer service database, and then they send those bills out, and they're responsible for sending out delinquency notices also. The delinquency notices are, of course, they're made aware of by communication with the customer database. Then there's the assembling payments and distributing receipts and coordinating information with customer database. That's where somebody actually receives the receipts from customers. They record who actually provided receipts, and they put the money in the district's bank accounts. All this is done electronically these days. These are services all provided by each of the cities. Some of the cities actually do some of the services with independent services. Like, I believe Aurora Grandy actually does mailing through a service. I know Santa Maria does mailing through a service, but they, but other functions they do in-house. So we tried to figure out how we could provide that. There's certain services that we can't provide because we are designated as a secure facility under the Federal Homeland Security Act. For instance, one of those items is some people like to pay their bills in cash. That is something we can't offer because you can't come to our counter to pay bills by cash because you aren't supposedly supposed to get through our security system unless you have a prearranged a meeting with us. So those that take interface with a person are things that we cannot do at our plant. We believe we could have a service in place by October of 2015. That's if tonight the board said go. and the board didn't ask for more review because that would take additional time. That's also coincidental when the next two-month billing cycle would be. We missed the August billing cycle, but the next two-month billing cycle would be October 1st. I assembled some costs for that service, and I've itemized the cost for each individual cost, and that's about $29,000 a year, or $4,833 for a bimonthly cost. So that's those are the costs I have. I did receive another a proposal from somebody who would bundle this. Evaluation is that the district would hire each of those individual services itself. There are people that will bundle this service for you. I got a cost just yesterday from someone who would bundle this service for us, and the costs to do that were $77,000 a year. So I looked at this as a pretty competitive cost that we've assembled here.
What did you say that was again?
The cost from a bundled service that I just received yesterday, so it's not in this staff report, was about $77,000, $76,690-something is what I remember. So I believe this cost, what worries me about that is I believe this cost is extremely competitive, and I'm hoping I could reproduce it if the district went ahead and said go. The other, one of the other options is to place the cost of the sewer service on the property tax rolls. This does appear to be something that is very doable. We're working with the county tax assessor's office, and Amy and John helped us a lot on this. We found somebody who specializes in doing this, this specific task, and they believe that we are in place to put this on the tax rolls next year. They believe the upfront cost is $10,000, and the annual cost to the district would only be $3,500 for the consultant to do this. So there's a $2 charge per parcel, but that charge is paid by the parcel, so that is not paid for by the district. So it's pretty easy to see that a $3,500 annual fee is considerably less than the $54,000 charged by the total in the of the member agencies at this time. So the problem, of course, with that is how do we go about in this interim period between July of next year and now to collect. So I think that it looks to me that the OCSD service is certainly less costly and would be a less burden on the public to continue with OCSD for this interim period. They've offered to consider placing it back on their bills and to also put the month by the two-month period we missed on the bills, and they've also offered to provide an additional service, or offered to consider an additional service of collecting for new connections, and that's something that we don't have today, and something to be very beneficial to the district. So that, in short order, is my report, and I'd be glad to answer any questions that I can. It's been I appreciate the board giving me the opportunity to do this, because I learned a lot as we did this process.
Okay, Mary, questions for staff?
No.
Barbara, questions for staff?
No.
Okay, I have some questions. First of all, the service cost for a customer database, what is the size of the database?
It's, we're calling it 2,500 in round numbers. It's somewhere between 2,200 and 2,400, but so 2,300 to guess.
And so is that limited to the customer base in Oceano?
Yes.
And then distribution of billing the same?
Yes.
And assembling the payments, I'm not sure.
It's all based on Oceano only.
Okay, and what is our approximate monthly bill in Oceana?
$1,497.
Okay. So back of the envelope math, the $23,000 that was billed for the service by OCSD last year equates to about 1 month. Came to over $1,350. So it's approximately 1 month of the district's billing is going back to the billing, which seems, in my mind, somewhat excessive. That we're giving up, you know, 1/12 of our entire receipts to the billing process.
I think it's the numbers are actually $42,000 a month, approximately. Mm-hmm. I can see how you could get that from using single-family residential rates of $1,497, but not all services are residential services at $1,497. It's approximately $480,000 a year in revenue from Oceano.
And each of the customers pays a fixed rate, do they not?
Yes, but if you have a restaurant, your rate is certainly higher than a single-family residence.
Yes, understood.
My understanding is it's about $62,000 per period?
It's $84,000 per billing cycle, $42,000 per month.
Okay.
I mean, that's based on the $480,000 a year of annual revenue from the district.
Yeah, do you have any idea how many more restaurants there are in Arroyo Grande than Oceano?
No, sir, I do not.
Or Grover Beach, perhaps?
Oh, actually, we do have that from the FOG program. Do you know about
that? Yeah. We provide FOG services for about 15 or 16 restaurants in Oceano, and I believe Grover Beach has 50 based on when we were doing our FOG research, and those are businesses that would have been serviced by FOG. So I'm basing this on FOG inspections. You could have other businesses doing other things, but basically the number would have been, I remember Grover and Arroyo were about the same at 50,
yeah.
And then we had about 16 restaurants in Oceano that we service.
I want to emphasize just what John said, though. Those are based on FOG inspections, which are not necessarily restaurants, but it's a good indication.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you for that. And again, the county would charge $2 after a fixed setup fee. They would charge $2 per customer.
But the customers pay for that, not the district.
And if I can jump in really quick, the setup fee is for the consultant that would get everything in place. And so that's a one-time $10,000 setup fee. And then after that, it's a $3,500 a year maintenance fee. So every year we have to go through a lot of the same steps, and that's preparing a report, making sure that all the costs are correct, the APN numbers are correct, et cetera. And so that's what the $3,500, the annual maintenance charge goes for.
So $10,000 plus $35,000 plus $2 a parcel.
$3,500, I believe.
I'm sorry, $3,500.
$3,500.
But the annual continuing cost to the district is $3,500 a year.
Plus, the
initial cost is the $10,000. So a really quick payback on that one.
Seem well advised to proceed in that direction.
And
have we looked at? I know that there's billing services. OCSD at one time used an independent billing service, and some other agencies do that. If we looked at
that's in fact what this reflects. Is these are three companies that perform various billing service, perform that aspect of the billing service. As I mentioned yesterday, I received an estimate from a one-in-all package billing service, and that was a considerably higher cost. at $76,000 a year. So this would still take district work to coordinate these three entities, whatever entities we chose, to work together to complete an operating service. But they believe that if we told them to go ahead today, that they could have something in place for an October 1st billing. This, I'm not going to say this would be free of any issues or obstacles, because this is a fairly complex thing to do, but that's what we came up with for the most least expensive way of performing a comparable service.
And was one of the organizations you talked to possibly Achievement House?
No, it was not.
Mm-hmm. Is there any other options that the district has, such as aggregate billing? In other words, what the interconnection is with all the member agencies is a trunk line sewer. And could processing be billed, for example, on the trunk line sewer and directly to the member agency rather than individual property owners?
Certainly nothing we had considered. That would be, wow, that would be a big change. If it's something you want us to consider, we can certainly take a look at that. I imagine it would take a fair amount of re-looking at the way we do things to do that. I know there are certain services that some agencies supply that way. I'm certainly not something we've done here. So no, I have not considered that as an option.
I just wanted to get an idea of how comprehensive options were that are presented here. Okay, with that, are there public comments on this item?
I just want to make sure I'm understanding this correctly. So aside from the one-time $10,000 setup fee and $2 to each customer for the county to do the billing, the annual fee is less than what OCSD charges every other month? Is that correct? For the year?
Correct.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
I spoke with the consultant, and so he sent me a quick email sketching out what he thought the price would be. And so this was based right now. I believe that his numbers were based on all of the connections within the district, but he said that the $10,000 was an estimate, and he would do an hourly charge to make sure that everything got up and running, and that is connecting the correct assessment value or charge with each APN number and putting that into the report, etc. And after that, it did sound like the $3,500 annual maintenance fee was a flat fee, and that didn't really change. So I think barring anything very different that happened or occurred that year, it is just sort of a maintenance fee to make sure that everything goes as planned.
Okay. Well, given that information, thank you. I'd like to suggest that we put Grover Beach on that too, because their charges to the district were $20,000 per year. If we can pay $3,500 to hook Grover Beach up to that, then I think we should look at doing that. And, who knows if Arroyo Grande is going to keep theirs at $13,000. But even that is $10,000 more than what the county would charge to do this. I have never understood the $22,000 for Oceano because number one, they weren't even collecting the hookup fees, which now apparently they're offering to do. I don't know if that's – I'm not sure why you come back with something that you've never offered to do before. I just don't get that. But if there's a way to save the ratepayers of the sanitation district that significant amount of money year after year after year, then I think we really have to explore that option. And it obviously, you know, we've gotten to the point where this has sort of really become a sore spot, and this would eliminate even ever having to address that again. It's fair for everybody. We need to move away from something that just isn't working. So, but as far as the interim, I have a suggestion for that. I say let's just, I actually did have a question about that, because in this report, it mentions at the bottom of page one, it says to avoid the loss of funds. And I'm not clear on whether we've determined whether that's just a temporary delay of recapturing those funds, or have we decided that that's once we've missed that billing, unless we go back to OCSD, that those funds are permanently gone. Does the county do back billing? You guys look like you have an answer already.
I just want to defer to Jenna, because she's actually researched this issue, mm-hmm. because that was certainly a question.
Thank you.
So we haven't been able to find anything in statute prescribing or allowing or prohibiting back billing. However, if we went with the county route, so there are two options, I guess. As long as we bill, all delinquent accounts can then be transferred onto the county tax roll. So we could transfer delinquent accounts as well as non-delinquent accounts, so current accounts, to the county tax roll, or we could just transfer delinquent accounts onto the county tax roll. So, and I did speak with a woman at the county who said that happens quite often. So I think that is, that might be in one of my little footnotes, but I think that's a good option for going about that route, just because the district doesn't have, I guess, the resources for trying to collect on any fees that are delinquent, and that is the toughest aspect of it.
I think we're missing her question, though. Oh. I think her question is, for the month that the billing we missed,
correct,
can we back bill for that?
And she, I think, gave me an answer that they haven't been able to find anything in statute, right, that prohibits that.
But I think for the back bill that we're not looking to put that on the county tax rolls, I think we're looking to collect it with the next billing cycle. Now, if people don't pay for whatever reason and they become a delinquent account, then we would look to place that on the
account. Okay, well, then I just have a question as to why you would spend approximately $77,000 to try to collect $42,000.
I'm not sure.
I'm sorry, maybe I'm misunderstanding. I thought you said that you had an all-inclusive group that would do the billing.
I'm saying that was one of the proposals we received for a year-long period.
Oh, okay.
That's a comparison to give you some idea of the range of costs that can occur for us doing our own billing.
Okay. And one other question, and that is, since Arroyo Grande and Grover Beach also are operating on billing customers without a contract, which Oceano doesn't care to do, is there any way to, I've heard at the last meeting that we have the database or we have the billing information. Is there any way just to ask maybe one of those other member agencies to bill that?
Ms. Spencer, I'm sorry, we're having
I understand. I'm sorry. Just throwing out some suggestions. Sorry, it does morph into that.
Thank you for
those
your
are
comment.
My questions. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other comments on this item?
Karen White, Halcyon. For the record, I'm not served by this sanitation district. I think there's an orange and apple situation here that's going on, because they keep saying the customers who are paying now are not the people who are going to be paying the property taxes in many cases. So you're going to have a shift of where the your revenue is coming from. Your revenue with the taxes is going to come from the property owners. They're going to have to pay bill their renters to get that money compensated. And I think you're getting into a really I, as a property owner, see, is a very, very complicated thing. And I think a lot of people are not going to be real happy about what you're doing. And I don't think you can back bill a bill that went to a customer who maybe is a renter in an apartment, you can't put that as a delinquent tax thing on somebody's property tax. I'd be livid. You know, if I was that apartment complex owner and all of a sudden all these delinquent taxes come that you don't even know about because the billing was supposed to be the customer's. So I just think, you know, think apples, think oranges, whatever way. I don't care what way you do it, but you better be real clear on that. Thank you.
Thank you for the comment. Ms. Austin.
Linda Austin, I'm an Oceano resident. I'm just sitting here. I can't believe the things that I'm hearing, what's going on. All this is doing, this little war that's going on, this standoff, is hurting the people of Oceano, the people that pay those bills. And as a, you know, landlord, some renters, they pay. If you try to get all these big complicated scenarios of how you're going to do, it's just going to mess with the people of Oceano. You know, it's they're used to paying their bills now, and now this last month we didn't get a bill. So then we're going to be, don't worry, I'm used to speaking over them. Then they're going to get a double bill. It's just a fiasco. It's a complete fiasco. So the offer from OCSD to do the billing and get it caught up, get people to understand, don't throw this into some big mess and a big war from Oceano and the other communities. Just take the OCSD's offer. You don't like paying it, then work it out through this next few months or anything, but don't just start. Go to the county for the tax rolls. That would cause the biggest mess. And I'm asking you, as an Oceano resident, that will be the one, and the people that, you know, friends, family, everyone that lives, neighbors, they're going to be just, it's just really bad for the community of Oceano. So you guys need to work it out and stop this nonsense. It's just embarrassing. It's ridiculous to sit here and listen to this stuff. So I'm sorry. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for your comment.
Patty Welsh, Arroyo Grande. Could have been simple. Oceano could have continued billing, but they chose not to. But what I'm here to say is that I would like for this to wait until all three board members are here. If you guys can't decide to let Mr. Knutson continue his investigation, then this ought to wait until the board members are here again. Thank you.
Thank you. Other comment?
First of all, I just want to take exception to the idea that this is a war between member communities. It's not. All board members, including Mrs. Lucy, have said they want something that's equitable. It's about being equitable. She's mentioned putting it on the tax rolls. I think that is the most fair, unbiased way we can get where we need to be. The fact that we cannot come to an agreement with Oceano, given the current circumstance, based on the manager of Oceano tells you right now that the current system doesn't work. I agree that this property owner versus renter is an issue, but people that rent homes know how to pass on the cost. Believe me, that's not brain surgery. They know how to do it. We've got to find an equitable way to work together, and I think the tax rolls takes the burden off every member agency to look like the bad guy. So I strongly would suggest to you that you move forward in that direction. What I'm not clear on, and maybe it's my own lack of hearing, is the period that we're talking about a few months that we would do an interim contract, or is it longer? I'm not clear on that one point, because Oceano's talked about doing an interim contract at a number I'm still not happy with, but if it's clearly only a few months, I'd be willing to say, let's move forward for a few months if we truly are moving forward. Lastly, I do want to comment on this idea that we have board members or non-board members here. Everybody here is a board member. You're all board members. And it's up to all of you, as alternates or otherwise, to be up to speed on every issue. So it's my hope, and I was very discouraged about the vote on the last issue, it's up to all members, including myself when I sit where you're at, to be up to speed on the issues at hand, not to say put it off for another day.
I appreciate that comment, but it's not on the topic.
It is on the topic because it goes to this very issue. The alternates that are here today could say, on this same issue, I'm not up to speed and we can't vote on it now. I'm asking you to move forward to put this on the tax rolls and move forward.
Thank you.
I didn't hear anybody say that.
I would also ask respectfully if we could, while people are making comments, please allow them to speak without interruption.
Good evening again. I'm Julie Tacker. And the first thing that I was looking for in your staff report was the equitable formula from the member agencies, because that was the direction, was to go back, meet with the finance directors, and come up with something that all three agencies could live with. That's not here. And if you have to wait tonight to get that, so be it. But I think you need to have that. Or some statement somewhere that says it, no compromise can be reached. No formula can be met. And we need to put that part to bed. Clearly, the county tax roll is the least expensive option for the district and for every ratepayer. And I mean every ratepayer. We're not talking about just Oceana when we get to the county tax roll. We are talking about Grover or Rio Grande and Oceana. $2 is less, well, actually, Rio Grande's, what, $1.32 or something? I think you figured it out once, Mayor Hill. So actually, it might be a tiny bit more for Rio Grande.
$2.03.
Oh, less. $2 is the least expensive option. The service charge from NBS, NBS Consulting did your Five Cities Fire Authority Assessment District. So they already have this data. This is why they can do it at $10,000. And I'm not clear if that $10,000 is for all three communities, but I would sure like that if that was the case, because that sounds very, very reasonable if he can include all three, because he already has the data, has all your properties, and he knows what's developed and what's not, but for a few things that have been developed since April of 2014. The property owner is the ultimate responsible customer. All of your cities in Oceano even have some resolution, some ordinance that says if your renter goes delinquent, it's going to go on the tax roll and the property owner is responsible. The question now is what to do about this interim. And it occurs to me that if you can wait until it gets on the tax roll, the average home in Oceano, all over that year, say it's a year, is under $180 a house. And if you stay in communication with that homeowner, they already got a bill from Oceano that had an insert in their letter, some kind of letter. You've sent a postcard. There's been a press release. If you continue to stay in communication with them and let them know that that bill is accruing, then it doesn't seem to me that they'd be surprised when it ends up on next year's tax roll, if you so chose to do it that way. I think what I'm most puzzled about is last meeting, Mr. Clemens proudly announced, and I think we all applauded, that you're $1 million in the black, and that really we're talking about cash flow. You're going to get this money. It's just about the cash flow. And since we're in such good shape from last year's great management, I think you can afford to go without the cash flow. My last point on, I don't have a page number in your staff report, the second to the last page before the attachments, where it talks about the district utilizes services of member agencies for all billing functions. The last sentence in that paragraph says the Oceano Community Services District would also consider including the mischarges due on the August 1st billing in the October billing for the same two-month charge of $3,666. So now you're getting two billing cycles for one lower price, but that goes to the same thing in that they're back billing. Nobody's questioning that bill in arrears. And if they can do 2 months, two cycles now in arrears for 3666 and get by, then I don't know why they can't somehow reduce their overall charge. And, you know, this $22,000 we've been talking about for several months now has always been too much.
Any other comment on this item? One other question does come to mind then, if we'll close public comment. The board did ask that a meeting of the finance directors of the various agencies be arranged. Did that come to pass?
There has been a meeting with all three members of the agencies, all the financial directors of all agencies, but not at one time because they have not been able to be at one place at one time. That it's largely a function of people being on vacation at different times. There's supposed to be a meeting Thursday, tomorrow, actually, with at least two of the financial directors of the agencies. I'm not sure that I can get all three of them there. That process is going to take more than a couple days because they all have different approaches to how they see it. Last time we discussed how we've discussed with all three how each other agency does it, and they were going to go back and look and see what their thoughts were on how each agency allocates or assigns the cost, because there's two different methods the agencies are using. There's assignment and allocation. So I think that's an accounting function, which I'm not an accountant, but they are, and they seem to think that's a crucial point in how these decisions are made.
And I think that was what the board had thought was a desirable thing, to get all of the agencies together so that discussion could happen and those understandings could be reached. And that was the desire of the board that happen in advance of the decision on how to proceed.
As I stated, that just wasn't physically mm-hmm. possible to get them all together.
I spoke with the Grover Beach director today and got a background. She and the Arroyo Grande director had put together an equitable procedure that they both agreed on 2 to 3 years ago, and then that Arroyo Grande person changed her position. And apparently Arroyo Grande continued their old billing system, and Grover implemented the new process. They have had one meeting, the two of them, and they are they have invited Oceano to both, including the meeting tomorrow. And they are very, very interested in getting all three of us on the same page and continuing the with an equitable procedure for each entity or each agency involved.
Yes, I think that's true. I just think that it can take a while to arrive at that conclusion.
Okay, Mary, comments?
Yeah, I just have a couple questions. So the 35 annual and the 10K startup, is the postage built into that 10K?
That would be born through the county's efforts when they
mail. I'm sorry, did you have something to add, Mr. Clemens?
There's no postage.
There's no postage, so they'll be delivered, the bills will be delivered, or?
That is included in the county tax roll. So that's the $2 part of the overall administrative fee the county charges.
Okay, so six times a year the county's going to...
That would be for the tax rolls, which would be the two times...
Once a year. Okay, twice a year. Excuse me. All right. Once a year that, billing, twice thank a year. You for my ignorance. Okay, so, and then also, too, is could you tell me how you plan to deal with the cash? In Oceano, a lot of people pay with cash.
That is a that is certainly a problem if we go through a billing system, and I mm-hmm. noted that that was a service that we cannot provide at the district. And that is something that in municipal utilities is something that is in, especially in this area, is in pretty great demand. You can ask that people pay by money order and request that that occur. And that's certainly how they pay for other bills like PG&E, for instance, or gas company. But it can lead to a greater degree of delinquencies, which would then end up on the county, on the tax rolls eventually. So that is a very good point, because that's a service, because that is a service that we cannot physically provide at the district.
I think the other utility companies have an authorized pay station within a 40-mile radius of the residence. And so when you have an authorized pay station, you don't have to pay a fee for, I know that PG&E has one, and I know that the gas company, they work side by side on that.
And that's something that
so
could be offered.
They do, under the Utilities Commission, they do demand that you have that in place.
And that's something that we could do, because, but it's a costly process, because when you do that, there is often a flat charge or percentage fee for partnering with a local business. For instance,
Check-Free, for example.
Check-Free. You can actually bond with 7-Eleven through a service that does mm-hmm. that, but you end up paying about $1.25 per bill, which is almost 10% of our service costs.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't advise it. And plus, you know, if you're an authorized, being authorized and being approved is two different things in that system, and I wouldn't advise anybody to go into that. Thank you.
One other comment that was brought up and as part of this is some of the issue that got us in, I think, where we're at is none of the member agencies had any written agreement with the district. And clearly that's something that leads to problems. And reading parts of various state codes, it appears that that may even be a statutory requirement. And clearly the operation of this district and possibly other entities without written agreements between the member agencies is not a recipe for success. So whatever arrangement we elect to go with would hopefully be memorialized with written agreements between all the member agencies.
If that's what you direct, we will pursue those agreements.
Seems to me that probably the best deal or a deal equivalent to what Arroyo Grande currently has is the county billing. Theirs is $2. Arroyo Grande's is approximately $2.03. But I guess Arroyo Grande doesn't incur the $3,500 annual maintenance fee. So
I don't think I understood what you were saying about AG charging $2.30.
Approximately $2.03 if you apportion the amount that Arroyo Grande charges.
Oh, okay.
The district for the billing, it works out to about $2.03 annually. So do we have a motion on how to proceed, or any consensus on how we want to proceed?
I would very much like to keep it within the three agencies as a ratepayer myself and a homeowner. I would not like to bulk the payment up twice a year, but that's my personal opinion.
We could, again, as was pointed out, I don't think this is something that has to be finalized immediately, but I would certainly like to see the meeting of all of the finance directors from the various agencies to discuss among themselves what, with all three present, not just two at a time or one here and then somebody else takes the information away. I would like to see all of the three finance directors in a common meeting.
I would agree with that.
I agree with you too, Mr. Hill, on that. I would like to see some collaboration and consistency across the board. What I'm concerned about, and as much as, you know, everybody wants a $30 break, is that if we delay this, continually delay this and delay this, that it only gets more expensive for the district, and it only takes away from the district and the plans for the future of the district. And yes, there may be $1 million in the savings account, but eventually that's going to go when we hire a general manager. And that's the main reason why there's additional funds in there right now. So if it's to be delayed, I would not want to see it delayed any more than 2 weeks, because if it's $60,000 now, we miss another billing cycle, that's $120,000 from the sand district, you know. So there is a risk of delaying.
Well, as was pointed out, as I understand now, Oceano has offered a temporary billing service for the current and the immediately past at the same rate, plus would include additional hookups in the area?
Correct. I want to make sure that it's clear that the district manager offered to consider this. He cannot make that decision. That would be a decision of the board.
Decision of the board.
And that there may be some relatively minor costs associated with placing the back billings onto that. He didn't indicate exactly how much that was, but he said relatively minor.
That would probably seem to be an expedient way to allow enough time. It sounds from your discussion that the finance directors have difficulty getting together, but I would think that would be something of a priority for them to engage in that. And this would allow, if we were to do that temporary offer, would allow enough time, I think, for the finance directors to get together. Do you think that a meeting of the minds there could be arranged in that amount of time?
In which amount of time?
Would probably be another couple months.
Well, I can certainly work towards the meeting. Coming to a common agreement is not necessarily something I can guarantee.
That's
by any means.
Yes, we understand. But I think having the meeting would certainly be valuable.
I would suggest that since we each represent the board of our agency, that we push the issue with our accounting people and make it happen.
Yeah, I'm definitely committed to speaking with Jennifer immediately.
Yes.
Okay.
Within the next 2 weeks, at the latest.
We will do the same in Aurora Grande. And again, whatever the result is, or if there's no result and we decide to go with the county billing practice that whatever it is should be a written agreement.
Yes. Agreed.
I'm a little confused.
Let me see if I can put all of this in the form of a motion. I would move then that the district entertain the offer from Oceano to include the missed billing and the current billing on one as was offered, and also include the new hookups that was also discussed as a temporary measure, while the finance directors of the three entities are given time to meet, hopefully come up with an agreeable proposal, and that whatever results from that discussion and potential agreement would be memorialized with a written agreement between the district and the various member agencies.
I'm thinking to amend that slightly to, as far as the fees for new connections, that be an issue added to the finance director's deliberations, and make the Oceano Service District offer just the current billing for the new cycle and the back billing.
Did you not want to include the fees for new connections and the?
I think that should be considered for the three agencies' finance directors to.
I think what the offer was is that they would make the collection for the two billing cycles that were the past one and the current one.
Right.
And then I would agree that that could certainly be a topic of the finance directors.
Right.
When
right. Yeah, the connection.
I don't want it entered into the present offer, because I mean, to me, it looks like a good deal if you want to.
Well,
take it. I mean,
but are there going to be a lot of connection fees to collect in the next 2 months?
There can't. I mean, by a lot. I don't know, but there certainly could be. I don't know the answer to that because I don't know what the construction is there.
Well, I'm just saying. I think. The Arroyo Grande and Grover finance directors need to take that into consideration.
I'd certainly be glad to include it in the discussion
right.
With them. Right. I just thought that including it in this, because of this offer, I thought it was a great offer.
Well, okay. I'm all right with that. So basically the motion restated would be as you originally stated it.
So that's the motion. Is there a second to the motion?
Yes, second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded that we proceed as was stated in the motion, which I could restate if necessary, but I think you have it.
Mr. Hill, is there staff? Is there somebody staff that wants to add anything?
I just wanted to let Mrs. Nichols know that the hookup fees are already collected by your agencies.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Amy.
So we have a motion and second.
Sorry. Can we clarify to make sure that we do get all the pieces together really quick? So we have entertained the offer from OCSD for back billing and current billing. And then the three CFOs will meet. If an agreement is reached, it will be brought back and then memorialized by contract. I also wanted to point out that if the county offer, we would need to get started in April in order to meet the deadline, so that can stay on the table as an option in the future.
The earlier we get started on the county offer, I think the better. The county wants data by May, and I'd like to make sure we assume there may be complications.
I understand that we would want to start that if necessary at the earliest possible time. And the other part of the motion was to include the portion of the offer from Oceana to include the hookups in that time frame. So that's the motion on the table. Steph has that.
I'll second. Clearly. That.
Okay. We have a motion and a second. Can we have a roll call, please?
Yes, sir. Director Nichols.
Yes.
Director Lucy.
Yes.
Chairman Hill.
Yes. Can we take a break for 5 minutes, please?
Thank you.
If we could come back to order, please. If we could keep the conversations in the back of the room down as much as possible, we would appreciate it. Item 5D, then, is consideration of preparation of RFP for district manager's position. Mr. Sweet, you have the staff report?
Yes, sir. This item was continued from the special meeting of August 13th, since at that meeting, the item kind of evolved. So while the topic, the title didn't change, I think the way the item is discussed has certainly evolved. The district manager tendered his resignation on August 5th, and it was determined that I will be in the employ of the district until September 11th. And there was public testimony taken at the August 13th meeting, and then it was subsequently continued to this meeting. And there are two items that require consideration: determining an interim manager to fill the role of the district manager until a permanent replacement can be found, and defining the position of district manager and determining a method to obtain a district manager that conforms to that definition. An interim district manager may be required to serve a period for as little as 3 months to up to a year. The interim person will require a person of some experience in governmental management and technical operations, which makes this kind of a unique role. The district manager doesn't need the skills of the plant superintendent, but he certainly needs a overall understanding of how a plant operates. It is likely that a person like this could be found as a retired person. There are resources available through the District Managers Association and from the League of California Cities of retired annuitants who are available for part-time work. It's been my experience that this position takes a lot of time. I spend often 30 to 40 hours a week at this job, and I could spend more. If you were going to retain somebody for a full-time basis who is a retiree, you're likely to pay in the $75,000 to $100,000 amount during that time. The other option is to hire an engineering consultant, which would give you a vast array of resources. There's always an issue with cost control when that happens. The district may choose to promote an individual who is presently employed by the district. This may be accomplished at a lesser cost, but then you end up with the problem of the person, how does that person perform both roles? And as I've said, that I'm doing a fair amount of work, and that would be hard to do both roles. So that's the interim position. Then the district manager position, you could retain an engineering consultant to manage the district. Of course, there's people who do that, and you would get a vast range of resources, of course, but then again, you end up with a cost control issue, as the district's familiar with. Hire a full-time district manager. This would run the district, in my estimation, in total costs, about $225,000 to $300,000 a year. There's some other minor issues in that there's presently a place, not a place at the district to house a district manager. When I come into the office, I sit at a portable table, and it's not really an office by any means. Or you could hire a retired annuitant, but there may not be enough hours available, as I'm experiencing, to adequately do the job. And I'm sure there's a number of other options. One that was cited at public testimony at the last meeting was restructuring the district to redefine the position of district manager to an administrative position under the authority of the plant superintendent. So those are the things that in a short period of time from the August 13th meeting to the night of Sunday, last Sunday, I developed this report, and that's what I came up with.
Okay, thank you very much for that. Kind of looks to me like what the board needs to do is look at the job description that we're needing to advertise for, determine what that's going to be, how much time needs to be devoted, and with the redundancy project and the various other things, I think that's clearly taking a whole lot more than 10 hours a week. And as you said, I think it's probably unfair on your time that we have had 30 to 40 hours a week currently being taken for that. So it would be determine the job description first, determine how we want to advertise that and solicit resumes. I don't know that it's our request for proposal is necessary, right? But we would invite resumes of interested candidates and then go from there. Is there any, does staff have any other comment on how we might operate in the interim period?
I'm wondering if it might be appropriate for us to work with our human resources consultant to develop the job description, take a shot at it based on comments that we've heard from the board, and bring some options back to you for your consideration, and then perhaps options for a recruitment plan, because there would be several ways you could do a recruitment if, in fact, the board is at this time deciding they should recruit for a full-time manager, then I first of all, I guess I need that decision. And then if that's not the case, then what is the board looking to pursue that we would write a job description? I understand you'd like a job description. I'm just not sure if that job description needs to reflect a full-time manager or some other thing, and that it's going to be a completely different job description if it's some other thing.
Does the plant superintendent have any thought on how we might proceed with that?
Yeah, I've thought about this an awful lot. I know when I came on, Paul and I discussed this very topic, and Paul believed that based on his experience and his experience in the past, that we did not need a full-time general manager. That was his opinion. That's his point. And as far as I understand, that's still his position. I can't imagine what a full-time general manager would do. I know we keep bringing up the redundancy policy, but we already have two engineers working on that. I don't know what more a general manager would do other than create a bunch of hours. I know that, and I'm trying to be careful here. I know that some agencies prefer general managers. They like them. They spend a lot of money on them. But I would say look at our record over the last 2 years without one full time. We've done better than we've done in a long, long time without that. So I'm not sure why would we change our structure at this point. It seems like we've got something that's worked really well over the last 2.5 years. So what compelling reason do we have to change a structure that has been so successful? We look around us again, and we see people who have hired general managers who have not been nearly as successful as we've been. Unless something happens to change what we're doing and our effectiveness, again, I just haven't been here 2 years and haven't been a big part of what's going on and haven't been here with two general managers. Again, it's at the board's discretion to come up with a job description, but I think when you do, you'll find out that we don't, I think, you know, 20 hours, 30 hours, I'm not sure what the hours should be, but to hire a general manager just to say we have one. Again, I guess I'm going to rest on the fact that we've been very successful in the structure we have right now. And when we did have a full-time general manager, things didn't go very well. So considering both of those points, it's kind of hard to justify going to full-time at this point.
Well, the need for a general manager, I think, is established in law, and the idea for that is to insulate the operating staff from the political issues to come before the board. So,
I was speaking to the time required, not whether or not we need one. I was speaking to the time requirements.
And I think you make a good point. We probably are not in need of a full-time manager, but I think we are looking at major projects coming up, redundancy being the key one, I think, that are going to take some administrative time, so probably more than 10 hours a week.
I would add to that there was a major project when Paul came on. It was called restructuring the whole plant, and he managed to get it done in 6 hours a day. I'm not saying that that's where we should be, but bear in mind that whatever we're facing now, Mr. Karp was facing at the time he came on, and he was able to accomplish that without being here full time. So,
Your point is well made. So,
how reasonable are our chances of finding a part-time general manager?
That's
I have no idea.
I think that there is that's a real question, in that if you're looking for a part-time manager, there's basically two places to find that person, as an engineering consultant or a retired person from the retired person, basically. So the engineering consultant, I think we are familiar with the issues that could arise from that. But it's certainly a plausible approach to doing it. The other way is the retired individual, and if a person is retired from the public employee retirement system, they're limited to 960 hours a year. There are other ways to find other retirees. If a person is retired, for instance, from LA County or LA City that have their own retirement systems, they're unlimited in what they can do with a PERS employer. But that narrows your options. I mean, the majority of public employers in the state of California are PERS employers.
According to my math, the 960 hours a year comes out to an average of 18-hour a week.
Yeah, I think we always refer to it as 20, but it's not 20.
Right, right. Also, having been through this with the fire district, that interim chief was in the same position as you are. He was only logging his 20 hours, but the time he spent there was twice that.
That's right.
It certainly is a tough issue for the district to face. I don't believe that Mr. Karp, and knowing Mr. Karp very well, feels that the current operation or the current issues faced by the board could be handled within the 6 hours. There was a time when our meetings lasted less than an hour on a continual basis. That was... and I was here for a year of that, and that was a considerably different situation than we have today.
Mary, comments and questions?
Well, I'm not sure that we need to come out the gate with a full-time GM, but just looking down the road and looking at the style of those plants and looking at how many of those types of plants are left on the coast of California, I think that the lifespan for that plant is, well, it's on the clock, let's just say. And the state isn't really being very supportive of those style of plants much anymore and want something different. We have a feasibility study out there looking at a satellite plant, which is kind of idling out there, and I'm not sure with everything else that's happening where that is, the satellite. Of course, the piping that's happening is under control and appears to be handled quite well by Mr. Clemmings. And I think that there's a difference between running a plant and having to deal with politics, having to deal with boards of directors that are elected and people who are appointed. And bonds that are coming down from the state and applying for those bonds and ensuring that we get the money for what's available out there, that takes a dedicated person who that's their primary focus is to get that funding and bring it in. So I think the South County scope of work is going to drastically increase probably within the next 24 months. And so I would certainly welcome starting out with a part-time GM and moving into full-time as the work demand increases.
I think one of the issues that got us into difficulty with the engineering consultant, as you mentioned previously, was the fact that it was not just the district administrator, but it was also the district engineer, which had an inherent conflict. Absent that dual role, I think there could be a successful model there potentially.
Certainly done elsewhere successfully.
Is there public comment on this item? Mr. Holt.
Good evening again. Ron Holt, Royal Grandy. I was wondering if you'd considered the possibility of getting one of these retired people's annuitants, I believe is the word, who would be devoted to doing the management, the political end of things, as you put it, and then if needed for things like the redundancy project, contract out that to a separate engineer. And that way you can keep the costs of the routine management, I guess you would call it, down. And if we need more, supplement that by contract and maybe keep costs somewhat under control that way. Thank you.
Thank you.
Debbie Peterson. I live in Grover Beach, and I think that your conversation just now, you've said several times, we've done things certain ways in the past, and things have been recommended in the past, and yet you made a decision tonight not to review the past for a while. So I'm suggesting that perhaps you really can't move forward on this one until you've reviewed what's gone on in the past, why it went wrong. That was the whole purpose. So I think it would be premature to make a decision this evening. One of the things I would suggest is that you go back and look at the bare bones, the basics. What is the mission? What were you legislated to do as a sanitation district? I think it's sanitation, and just bearing that in mind as you make your decision, refer back to Mr. Karp's recommendation, because he has a lifetime of doing that, and that you consider very carefully taking on a lifetime pension paid high employee commitment when you in many cases could bring in a specialist consultant to solve a short-term problem or even to manage a midterm problem without long-term health care and expensive pension expenses. I think it would be just obscene to pay $225,000 to $300,000 for a district administrator forever, plus $100,000 to a headhunter as a one-time payment. That represents 10% of the revenue to just one individual, and it lasts forever. And I would ask you to ask yourselves, would that be the best way to fulfill your mission to serve the public? I think that an interim district manager is possibly a good idea. I was concerned about the comment, and perhaps I just misread it, but there was a comment saying an interim district manager would require full-time employment, and I would suggest that whoever does the requiring should not be the interim manager, but should be the district. You require what you want. You don't be told what someone else requires if you're going to be representing the public well. And finally, I would ask that you pay a lot of attention to the people who are on the ground, because you have some people out there running that plant who've done a fabulous job. You've got two engineers who've worked together and turned it around, who are ready, willing, and able. And you've got a superintendent who has turned it around, and you've got some workers out there who are really dedicated. And there's probably no one better placed to tell you how to get that place run and turned around, apart from someone coming in from the outside and looking in as Paul Karp did. There's really no one better out there than the people who are doing it every single day. So I would recommend always going to your people and asking them what their recommendations would be, because they are the experts on their business.
Thank you. Comment.
Julie Tacker, and first I'd like to say for the interim, the option to temporarily promote an individual who's presently employed by the district, I think Mr. Clemens is qualified. He covers when people go on vacation. He's been able to manage and administer when necessary. And just from experience, we had Pavel Ogren as our interim general manager in Los Osos for 11 months. And during that time, that was a new person. It was a new district. But they developed what the general manager's position was going to be. And I think you need Mr. Clemens' input on what a general manager is going to be. I think you need Mr. Sweet. I think it would be prudent to ask Mr. Karp for input on what this district, because the three of those gentlemen know it best now, the current district now, what it needs as far as administration. And I'm really sorry that this staff report puts numbers to what a position might be. What I've seen when that happens is that somehow the district's then married to that price. And I think you experienced a little bit of that in Arroyo Grande last year, where your headhunter said, well, you're not paying enough, and bumps the number whether your council wanted to or not. That's out there. and then you're committed to it. So before we ever talk about those kinds of numbers and a full-time general manager, I think we just need to sort of take care of ourselves and see where the needs are. I was looking at your plant manager's report, and you have Mike Nunley doing grit removal. He's doing a development of RFP for the bar screen, and he's doing the GIS programming. So you're already outsourcing some of these things that you were worried about, and we just hired him 2 weeks ago to work on the redundancy. So here's somebody that's up and coming, and he could actually have some input on what your administrator may need to do. And then, of course, Mr. Gehring was here, and Shannon was here tonight. And all of those people can help you. And I don't think you need to rush into any decision on even whether it's part-time or full-time. But my personal opinion is you're going to need somebody more at first, and then they can back off as they find their groove. So I look forward to the process. I don't think you can pin anything really down tonight. And, you know, I encourage and look forward to how this all unfolds.
Thank you. Any other comment?
I agree with what Ms. Peterson said, and I will say it again, as I've said it for a long time now. We can't move forward until we figure out what went wrong first. You guys are wanting to put the cart in front of the horse. Let's figure out what went wrong, and then we know where to move this plant. I mean, it's kind of common sense. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comment? Okay, hearing none. Board discussion. Mary, comments? Barbara?
Well, I think the comments from the public are very interesting and raise interesting points. I do think we need to move as much forward as we can in making a determination of what we need for an interim district manager, if we can, and leave the full search issues, whether full-time, part-time, to another day.
I think it's quite common in cities and districts to appoint an acting manager from the staff during the time that you're in a recruitment. So that's something that we could certainly entertain as an acting position. But I tend to agree with the comments that were made tonight that we should understand what happened and what some of our issues are before we move forward. And noting that the next meeting is on the 2nd, that we might all consider what the job description is. We may consult with our own staff, with Mr. Karp and others who were here previously, with Shannon and Mr. Gehring, to solicit advice on how we might proceed and what the needs of the district are.
Is there, I'm trying to determine what your direction to staff, what you would like from staff in this regard.
I think what we have from staff is probably adequate until the next meeting.
I agree with that.
So I don't need to know that we need to The one thing that staff could probably assist with is just determining the various outlets, such as CSDA and League of Cities, where the postings might be made as a solicitation for resumes and so forth. When we get to that point, that we would be able to move forward by
for the interim or the
for the either interim or permanent position.
Okay.
Just as to where we might make those postings.
Yeah, I would suggest that they're going to be different places for different approaches.
Yes. And then I would defer the item until the next meeting at least.
So is there a motion for continuance then?
I'll move to continue the item to the meeting of the 2nd.
Second.
Okay, all in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Passes unanimously. Next item, consideration of revisions to the vacation policy. Mr. Sweet.
Chairman of the board, members of the board, the item before you tonight is a policy revision to our vacation policy. It was noticed by our board, by our bookkeeper and our manager that we had a issue with a vacation accrual that exceeded beyond our limits of vacation hours at the district, and that these inconsistencies were causing some issues with enforcing the accrual limitation policy. Also, it had been a number of years since our vacation policy had been revised, and there have been significant changes to rules associated with vacation. So given the needs of the superintendent, we moved ahead to change the accrual time, up the accrual time to 240 hours, and we're proposing that we buy down two individuals' time to 180 hours, which would allow them some room to accrual time for vacation accrual. 180 hours, which is the current accrual time, is pretty low, very low, for public agencies in today's world. And 240 is more within the realm, but not necessarily very high. So that's summation of my report, and I'd be glad to answer any questions that I might. Alicia Lara with Laura Human Resources Services is here tonight and may be able to assist me in providing you with answers.
Okay, thank you. Questions of staff? Barbara?
Well, I was going to ask about the difference between 180 and 240, but he has already explained that very nicely. Thank you. I would like to hear from the Lara Human Resources to what recommendations they would make.
Good evening, Alicia Lara, Lara Human Resources. I'm not sure about what recommendations you're requesting as to the limit or the way that the policy is going to be implemented.
Are you looking for a summary of?
On implementation.
Okay, well, there's policy. Currently two individuals that have gone over the limit, the current limit of 180 hours, and to bring them in line with the current limit so that everybody's on the same playing field moving forward, the recommendation was to pay them off what the amount that they're over, to bring them down to the 180 so that they have a fresh start and they don't stop accruing. Where everybody else can continue to accrue. And because there are staff vacancies right now, there is salary savings, and there would not be any new monies needed to pay those individuals off, according to the staff work that was done to determine how much it would cost to pay them off. And from working with staff, the employees were put on notice sometime early in the year and then formally in April that they needed to work with the district superintendent to bring their totals down, and they have been trying to do that. But I guess due to previous shortages in staff and the way the different administrations were run prior, these employees were allowed to exceed the limit. And so we've put stopgap measures in place in the policy to prevent that from occurring in the future. And then just to make sure that the employees are fully aware that it is their responsibility, as is best practices for employees to track their own time. And those numbers, I believe, are shown on their pay stubs. Yes. Okay. So in this agency, it's the same as it is everywhere else. You can see your vacation accrual balances as you get a paycheck. And so it's just a reminder to them to review that weekly or biweekly when they get paid.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Laura, right?
Alicia.
Alicia, I'm sorry.
First name. Last name is Lara. Yes.
Okay, Alicia. So I looked at the county. Just I was wondering if there had been any comparisons. I hadn't seen any comparisons. And the county is 0 to 5 years at 160 hours.
For the accrual rates?
Correct.
Those are...
And then for 5 to 10 years of service, 240 hours. And then I can go on, you know, after 10 years of employment, 320 hours. So, and that's the county, how they do it. I kind of look at other governments now, not to say that there's a comparison, because there's not. But this is my concern is that, and I've seen this happen before, is that you do have people who accrue, and we really want them to take a vacation.
Yes.
Because that's the best workers is when they go and take a vacation. But when you have a, say, let's say a supervisor who takes an 8-week vacation because they've accrued and they've been allowed to continue to accrue, at no fault of their own, of course, you know, but still they have 8 weeks. That institutionally harms the organization.
Correct.
So how do you find that balance?
Well,
you treat your employees respectfully, you know, but still you don't break your organization.
Right, and that's what implementing the 240-hour limit is meant to do. It's bringing it up from, as Mr. Sweet said, the 180 was low. And so we're bringing it up to 240 so that they can accrue up to 240 hours. But in the meantime, they will work with the superintendent who is reviewing those totals biweekly. A report comes out when payroll is run that shows the vacation accruals. It shows the sick leave accruals, any accruals that they have. Excuse me. And the superintendent reviews those and ensures that people are staying within the limits and then works with them to schedule time, so that they don't go over this 8-week, they don't get big balances like that.
So somebody who doesn't have, say, 5 to 10 years vested in their government entity, you know, goes to 240, because I use those comparisons. So the county's saying, you work for us between 5 to 10 years,
mm-hmm.
you know, and you can accrue up to 240 hours.
I'm sorry, and you're saying that was the county?
Yes.
Okay.
And so we're saying that you can accrue up to 240 hours first day you start working, basically.
Well, that is the limit of the number of hours that you can accrue over a period of time. But the we're not changing the... Okay. That is the limit that you can have on the books at any point in time, but we're not changing the accruals. The accrual rate mm-hmm. of how much you earn is staying the same. We're just increasing the limit that you can have. So realistically, a new employee could not take a vacation the first year
Correct.
Or the second year and still be within the limit, but the superintendent is dedicated to working with the employees to ensure that they take at least a week or two off so that they have the refresh. That's what vacation's for. That's what the policy says it's for. And so working with staff to ensure that they are allowed and scheduling is such that the employees can take time off to refresh and come back. And and not, this is not supposed to be a savings account, if you will, so that the accrual continues to grow and grow and grow, and then the employee does not have the opportunity to take the time off to refresh and relax. And so the earning from 0 to 2 years is 80 hours. It's 10 days.
Correct.
And so if you work from, but that's 10 days a year.
And then, yeah, then you have your paid vacations on top of that, mm-hmm. your paid holidays. But
oh, the holidays, separate. Yes. The holidays are 13. Separate. Yeah, because the whole organization closes on the holiday.
Right, which is 13 more days in that mm-hmm. year.
But they don't bank those, as far as I understand.
That's right. But I don't want people to be under the impression that they just get their vacation time, because that...
Oh, correct. But this policy here is strictly written for the vacation portion of the benefits.
Correct.
Yes.
So how do we stop, still keep it, you know, the 200... So we moved to 240 hours. So how do we keep the employee from taking 240 hours of vacation time and saying, see you later, see you in 6 weeks, see you in 8 weeks?
Oh, well, the policy also says that time has to be scheduled with, let's see, somewhere in the policy it says that actually the district supervisor is the one that approves the vacation, and it's not to unduly disrupt the operation. I'm going to have to read the policy to find where it says that. John, if you can help me too. It's been a while since I gave this to him.
A vacation requires the approval of the supervisor and superintendent.
Oh, number 9. The times during the calendar year when an employee may take his vacation shall be determined by the department head with due regard for the wishes of the employee and particular regard for the needs of the service. And so if the requirements of the service are such that the employee must defer part or all of his annual vacation in a particular calendar year, the appointing authority may permit the employee to take such deferred vacation during the following year. And the way that we're going to stopgap that is that employees are responsible to monitor their own vacation balances, and if requirements are such that a deferral may be necessary, they are to advise the plant superintendent in advance, and a written record of each pre-approved deferred vacation signed by the plant superintendent noting the details shall be kept on file with the district manager. So that's how it's done. So someone can't come in and demand to have a month at a time. It would have to be worked through to make sure that the operations were not unduly affected.
Right. And then the supervisors would report to the GM if they put their requests into the GM.
Yes. And it would all be documented, and the files would be kept on file.
So I'm saying is if a supervisor wants to take a 6 to 8 week vacation, they must go to the GM for
well,
approval.
I think the plant superintendent is over the whole staff, including the supervisors, but it would be the plant superintendent would have to request that from the GM.
Okay.
Yes, that's correct.
Trying to make sure the order is correct. Thank you.
Okay.
So the maximum accrual that we're proposing is 240 hours, which is 6 weeks. And is that in line with other agencies?
It's actually still a little bit low. It's average, depending on the agencies that you're comparing to. We didn't do a full-on scope of comparison. We just looked at what was reasonable for the district and the size of the staff with the district, and we felt that 240 hours was reasonable.
Mm-hmm. And I'm, again, concerned that people use the vacation time for vacation as much as possible during the year. Okay, thank you very much for the
You're welcome.
Enlightenment. Is there public comment on this item?
Okay, I have never been a government employee, so some of this just blows my mind, to put it mildly. It sounds like there were two people who went over their 180 hours of vacation time. So now we want to bump their vacation time up to 240 hours. I don't know. Being in private sector, we kind of lived by a use it or lose it kind of thing. And I think there always should have been a stopgap. You know, we, the citizens, pay for their vacation. So we're talking now 240 hours of vacation time. Let's not forget the personal time, the sick time, and the holiday time. So how much time are we giving these people? And I really could give a hoot less
what the rest of the county does. For two people, this is being gracious.
It's, I think there's a misunderstanding there about vacation hours in a year vice accrued vacation time, which is unused vacation from prior years.
I have just one little correction, and I'm sorry, there's not a page number on this, and I didn't print the whole policy, but it starts with the from 10 plus up to 20 years. On that page, item number 6, I believe the third line down should say no additional vacation, just the addition of an AL. If I'm reading that right, it just, you know. And then if you go to item number 12, and I don't know if this is just going to be copied and pasted, so that's why I'm saying there's just a couple little things here. If you go to number 12, which I believe is the next page, after the 240 hours, it looks like there's a period to me. I know my eyes are bad, but I think it's a period. Yeah, it looks like a period. So that either needs to be removed or inserted a comma, whichever. But I know in our policy handbook, it's very, ours is so thick now, it has a table of contents and everything, but it would be very helpful if there were page numbers on these. Maybe it does have a table of contents, but it makes it a lot easier for the employee to reference back to it if they can just buzz right to the vacation policy section. And I did have a question about whether employees' hours were easily trackable by just looking at their paycheck stub, and that answer was already given, so I think everything else looked really good. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any other comment? Okay, hearing none, back to the board. Do you have either discussion or a motion?
I do have a question of staff. Item 2B, employees who work on an intermittent or seasonal basis, and all employees who work less than half-time. Just out of curiosity, how many employees would that include? None? That's just boilerplate language.
I think there are, we have sometimes temporary employees, and I think it's just to make sure that it's clear that only these full-time employees have this benefit.
Okay, thank you. I move that we revise the vacation policy to increase vacation accrual limit from 180 to 240 and allow existing employees vacation time with accrual limits.
I might add that I would ask that you approve the resolution associated with this, because I believe this will take the resolution. I know that it's not often we have a resolution, so but this one we do, so I'd ask that you would...
And that's resolution 2015-330, I believe.
I meant the motion to include that.
Okay, I'll second the motion. That is, again, to revise the vacation policy to increase the accrual limit from 180 to 240 hours and align the existing employee's vacation time with accrual limits, as well as approving resolution number 2015-330, a resolution of the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District Board of Directors adopting revised vacation policy as presented at the district board meeting of August 19th, 2015. The only other discussion I would have on that is, again, I would encourage management to help all employees have their vacations in the year that it's earned. Any other discussion?
I just don't see any language protecting this from the 6 to 8 week vacations. And that's my only concern. I don't mind the 240 hours. That's fine that it's earned, you know, but I don't see any language that is beyond all counsel or, you know, is it the language is weak? So I support the concept. I just don't see any safeguards in place to protect people from deciding they want to take an 8-week vacation.
And there may be some reason to do that for as long as it was arranged properly with the district staff and management.
It doesn't say that in there. Does it speak to it in the resolution?
Well, the motion has been made and seconded, so can we have a roll call, please?
Yes, sir. Director Lucy.
Abstain.
Director Nichols.
Yes.
Chairman Hill.
Yes. Okay, the motion passes 2-0 with one abstention. Miscellaneous oral communication, item 6A. Mr. Sweet or staff?
Oral communication.
I just wanted to report that I will not be present at the September 2nd board meeting. I'm getting married in 2 weeks, so I will be almost married at that point.
Our very best wishes.
But we'll have a representative from our office who's also very familiar with public law and public agency representation here.
Thank you. Any written communication?
There is one item included in your packet that's from the California Special Districts Association regarding committee and expert feedback team participation. If someone from the district would like to participate, there's a form in which you can submit your interest, and that's all I have.
Okay, thank you. Public comment on closed session. Is there any public comment on the closed session? Hopefully that will move very quickly tonight. Hearing none, we can move to closed session.
So we...
If council would introduce the closed session, please.
We're going to now adjourn to closed session for a conference with legal counsel for existing litigation. Pursuant to paragraph 1 of subdivision D of section 54956.9 of the government code, 2 cases, South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District versus State Water Resources Control Board, and also South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District versus Special District Risk Management Authority. And the other matter is conference with legal counsel for anticipated litigation pursuant to paragraph 2 of subdivision D of section 54956.9, 1 case.
Thank you very much.
The first meeting, which is September 2nd.
Okay, we're returning from the closed session, and I'll ask council to report on the closed session result.
The board heard a litigation report from interim legal counsel and took no reportable action.
Thank you very much. That concludes the business this evening. Is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.